Welcome to the Lighter Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and all podcast catchers, YouTube. It's the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And actually, Nicole Six is not here. For the first time in a long time, we have, I'll remind you what the last time you were on, but everybody's favorite heavy metal DJ in a box.
Hi, guys.
And Lanny, and I think I just saw Lanny's dick, so that's good. And,
oh no, this is actually Khaleesi, and she's female.
Oh, okay. It's been so long since I've seen male or female that I'm very confused these days. And you know, there's so many non-binary genders that I don't know what's going on. But it's good to see you.
Good to see you.
And
good
your
to
new
see
lips,
you, Dustin.
Likewise, Hannah. It's been a minute.
Yeah, it and has. She jumped the gun, but here's our favorite horror director. He's been so busy in 2022. You have how many movies have you? According to IMDb, you released 4, and you have like 10 that you're working on right now in post production. Is that about right?
Yeah, some of those like 10 are actually done. Just IMDb hasn't like updated that. So yeah, I think by the end of this year there will be something like 19 or 20 movies.
Wow. And you've improved your casting too, because I was in briefly Apex Predators 2, which is premiering this week, and the new movie that you're starting to film this week, Don't Trick or Treat Alone.
Mm-hmm. Yep, start filming that tomorrow, and you're in it actually, aren't you?
Yes, and you also have there's some sort of shark storm thing happening, and stuff in the hood, and all sorts of weird stuff. I don't know what. What was it? What? Yeah, let me look at your IMDb. There was one that I was looking at.
Oh, yeah, so I'm currently finishing post on Sharks in the Hood.
That's Sharks in the Hood. And yes. Quakesaurus is coming.
Quakesaurus. Yeah, that was a movie I shot almost a year ago, actually. So that's been done for a minute.
So Dustin, he always is filming great, great movies. And this is another show where we're going to tackle one of these underrated movies that everybody tells me, because last time I had Dustin and Hannah on a Zoom, we were talking about our top 10 favorite horror movies, and I think 4 of mine were not horror movies really, but Hannah said one of her favorite horror movies of all time was Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan.
Correct.
Which I never saw until last night, and we're going to talk all about it. And Dustin's actually joining us because he worked on the DVD set and knows a lot of behind the scenes information. So we're going to do a deep dive into Jason Takes Manhattan, and probably just like the movie, it'll take us 3/4 of the way before we even get to Manhattan. But before we get there, we need some of this. I need some energy, and I've got the best energy drink here, Raise Energy Drink. This is the best. This is Galaxy Burst flavor, which I don't know if you tried, Hannah. This is delicious. Tastes like Fruity Pebbles. Tastes like Fruity Pebbles.
I like Fruity Pebbles.
Mmm, delicious. The best part about Raise? Zero calories. Zero carbs. Zero
there protein. We go.
Don't go to GNCs or gyms where this is overpriced. Use our code in the description on YouTube or other podcast catchers to get 15% off a case of Raise Energy.
That's a great deal.
It's a great deal. So, Hannah, the last time you were on the show, which was in November, I drank a full, basically 3/4 of a bottle of absinthe for 2 hours and fell out of my chair. Last time Dustin was on the show, we were in studio. It was the first time at pirate.com studios, and it took me 45 minutes to learn how to figure out the board, which led to everybody getting completely frustrated and me almost losing my mind. And then we had a great show. The funniest part about that, even funnier than that, Dustin, is I remember you were outside in the back, and everybody's having a hard time with, they have door codes where you get in. Passed that by now. This is about a year ago. And so we got in, Nicole and I got in, and we opened the door, and you guys are outside, you and your sister and your whole entourage. And then, so we opened the door, and Nicole shuts the door right behind her. So,
like, she steps out to let us in or something, and then the door closes, and we're like, oh,
yes,
shit.
Exactly. Like, nobody could get in with the door closed. We're like, yeah, we finally got you in, and then bam! And then we had to go around the front. It was a whole thing. Anyway, so, and the last time you...
That.
Yeah, and We had a deep dive a few weeks ago. Nicole and I, one of her favorite horror movies, which surprised me, was Alien versus Predator, which Dustin's making a face and Hannah is immobile. Dustin, you don't like Alien versus Predator?
I didn't say that.
I mean, it's someone's favorite movie.
It was one of her favorite movies. She thinks it's fun. And I hadn't watched it in a long time. And I watched it in preparation for the show, and I was pleasantly surprised.
So I think that Alien vs. Predator Requiem, which is the second one,
That's the R-rated one.
Yeah, that one's way better. Like, I thought, because the first one's PG-13. I think that's kind of what hurt it, because it's just not like a brutal alien or predator movie. And then they went and did an R-rated sequel, and it's obviously better.
But there's a lot of acid and alien blood and predator blood in it, just not human blood.
Yeah.
I was surprised that was PG-13 because I thought it was R, but
that was a whole weird era where like they were scaling back again. Like they had the unrated movies like coming out in the early 2000s, and then it was right. Like, oh no, this is getting too out of hand. So now that they have PG-13, they went like opposite direction for a while.
I remember being a kid in the video store, and I always wanted to go for the R movies because it showed the best gore. Mm-hmm. I didn't want PG-13. I was like, nah, that's not gonna be enough for me.
I would have thought you would be in the video store making a beeline for Faces of Death and all those really nasty.
I did watch those up until they had one incident with a puppy, and then I stopped watching them.
Yeah.
Okay, so yeah, I think I know what you're talking about. That's part four, I want to say. It's like a...
Austin, of course, knows which volume of Faces of Death.
That one's all fake. It's all fake. And so they have like... Yeah, it's a stuffed dog. Well, it's like it cuts between them having their pet dog, and they like set it down on this table. They flip it over, and then they cut to a close up, and you can tell it's like a teddy bear. And they're just like cutting into it. And there's just like, you know, like chicken guts coming out or whatever. And it's just supposed to be like this shocking, like, you know, Asian family eating a dog. So yeah, it was really like un-PC, and it was like 1990 or something. But yeah, when you watch it now, it's ridiculous.
It's politically correct and stupid at the same time. It offends so many people.
They pulled them off the shelves, though, correct?
Well, they wouldn't sell them at any mainstream store. Yeah, you can only get them at like mom all places because, yeah, no corporations would carry.
Yeah, yeah. Blockbuster did not carry the Faces of Death franchise, but
yeah.
Yeah.
Dustin, you have your own knockoff Faces of Death, though. How's that going?
So, okay, it's interesting. That's actually, yeah, this one right here is Faces of Dying. It got a Japanese Asian release on VHS. This is the first one. But yeah, no, I did like a, you know, I'm kind of known for doing mockbusters and stuff. And so we did a series called Faces of Dying that started out in 2015. And then back in like 2019 or 20, I ended up doing multiple sequels because I had found, now that I'm selling my own films, I kind of see what sells and what doesn't. And it's still true that like death and shockumentary stuff is really popular overseas. Like I have all these German and UK and Japanese fans that buy all of them. So we make these, they're all fake. It's like I get other filmmakers to self-film like fake suicides and fake murders. And then we put it all together in like a 45 minute or hour long compilation with like a doctor host giving like jokes about death and stuff in between. And yeah, they're like my biggest sellers. And so I've been making them still up until now, but I think I'm gonna kind of phase out of it now that I'm getting, you know, my own studio going, doing mainstream stuff. I'm gonna like kind of put a few of those behind me.
But let the Germans or the Japanese come up with their own exploitation.
Yeah, you know. I mean, they've always have been a very, like, they're, like, shocking material. Those cultures are very extreme, you know, so it makes sense.
We're aware.
There's a
all you have to do is watch the History Channel, and they're always talking about World War II, as we know. Go ahead, Anna. What were you going to say?
There's a lot in Shudder. There's one I saw a preview for I do want to watch. I believe it's a Japanese movie. And it cuts to this little girl, you know, drawing a picture of a pretty woman. She kind of wants to look like her. But everybody has this, like, extreme plastic surgery where they look like dolls. They're really freaky looking.
So basically your dream come true.
No.
Hey, you just have that extreme surgery.
But in this world, it's kind of like, what was that? The Twilight Zone, where everybody had like pig faces and the girl was very beautiful. Yeah. I think it's kind of like a take on that. But these people, they're like creepy dolls. And this little girl wants to save up her money so she can get the plastic surgery. I mean, the dog even has it.
Oh, get any ideas, Hannah?
The dog.
I wouldn't be surprised. But anyway, Hannah, let's let's get to what we're going to be talking about. We're talking about Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan. When did you first watch this?
I was itty bitty when I saw it.
I was just on video?
VHS, yeah. I'm that old.
Wow. Did you be kind and rewind it?
Actually, yeah. I was a very, very nice little girl, and I did follow the rules on the sticker.
So when you saw Be Kind Rewind on Jason Jason Takes Manhattan, you're like, I better rewind or I'll get in trouble.
Yeah.
And Dustin, when was the first time you saw Friday the 13th, Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan?
I want to say that it was on a marathon on USA Network back in the 90s with like 6, 7, and 8 back to back by Rhonda Shear hosting, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, wait, wait. Three.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw the covers. The TV.
Yeah. Movie. And then, of course, I had rented the VHS. I owned the VHS and all the other ones eventually, but I think that was how I first saw.
So let's go into, so besides Part 8, which you both love, what is your favorite besides that one, Hannah?
Oh, geez, that's a tough question.
This one stands out that much, heads and shoulders.
Yeah, that one stands out the most to me because there's about 3 or 4 scenes that really stick with me and just made me love it.
Even though it's probably the most bloodless Friday the 13th. It's probably the most mild as far as
it goes. Not necessarily. I mean, it's...
Well, we'll get into it, like, but I'm just saying.
I think the year it was made, they did a lot of nods to things I appreciate, you know, in pop culture.
The heavy metal chicks pretty
heavy
awesome.
Heavy metal chicks, yes. Yeah. Punk rockers.
It's very 1989. It's everything about it screams 1989.
Yeah,
including the white guys in the gang and all sorts of things. It's so 1989. The hair, yes. The style, all that.
Also, you have to take into consideration Jason's a little bit of a hero in one of the scenes.
Well, we're gonna get to that, but and Dustin, besides this, which is your favorite Friday the 13th? Everybody has a different one.
Okay, so I like 3, 7, and Jason Goes to Hell. I like 3 because it's the only one in the series that's shot in CinemaScope, like how the Halloween movies were. So it's like the wide aspect ratio. So all the shots are really artistic in it. I think it has a really good story. That's the one where Jason gets his mask, where he gets, leaves the bag and gets the mask. And in 3D, which I have the 3D Blu-ray and I have a 3D
TV. And then they throw things at the...
yes, it's so cool. So I love that. I love Part 7 because that was the original Freddy versus Jason. That was going to be, it was written for Jason versus Freddy, but then they couldn't secure the rights with New Line right away. So they had to change Freddy's character with a psychic girl with a telepathy.
Right.
And so that is still a lot of fun. And then I love Jason Goes to Hell. That one grew on me a lot because I think it's a fun 90s, gruesome, exciting action. And I think that a lot of people don't consider that one, you know, when they think of the series, but I love it.
Well, ironically enough,
when I think about the end of the Jason Goes to Hell.
Yes, yeah, see, and that was the thing. It was like that was finally when they did get the rights when New Line owned Jason and Freddy, so they were able to do that first crossover.
Gotcha. And fun fact: this movie we're talking about, Friday the 13th Part 8, Jason Takes Manhattan, is technically the last Friday the 13th movie besides the remake, because when New Line took over from Paramount, they couldn't use Friday the 13th. That's why
they didn't have the rights to Jason the character.
Right, they had rights to the character, but they didn't have the rights to say Jason Friday the 13th. So that's why it's Jason Goes to Hell, Jason X, and Freddy versus Jason.
Yep.
But anyway, I've seen all of these in like dribs and drabs, and I think the only ones I've really seen all the way through, to be honest with you, are this one because I saw it for the show. Jason Goes to Hell, Jason X, and Jason Friday the 13th Part 6, which a lot of people think is the best. The one where Horshack digs him up from the grave and
like zombie Jason.
Yeah, isn't it like a lightning strike?
That's the one where they established that he's supernatural, because like up through Part 4 he was still human, and then Part 5 it wasn't Jason, you know, it was like a copycat. So then in Part 6 they resurrect him from the dead.
And Part 6 is where they kind of went with the what was going on with everything else, with the, you know, Dream Warriors being a little comedic. It made Jason a little comedic. They had the little James Bond thing, and yeah, it was a little tongue in cheek. So I saw that. I liked that. And but I mean, the first movie, Jason's not even the killer, except for at the end.
But that's still a really good movie. It's still actually really suspenseful and atmospheric and well done.
Which even the creators will admit was a Halloween ripoff.
Yeah,
it established its own tropes.
Yeah.
And then part two, which a lot of people don't, I don't know too many people that say this is the best, but it's where he's got a sack like the Elephant Man over his head. He doesn't even have the hockey mask.
That one's underrated.
Yeah. Yeah. His first one has Kevin Bacon, so it has star power. And the second one, I don't know.
And then, the second one's good, though, for the ending where she has to dress up like his mother to trick her.
Yeah, she was a smart one. I was a smart cookie. You're like, this girl's going to make it.
Yeah, like that was cool that they did that.
And the third one, Dustin's already talked about it. The fourth one is the Corey Feldman one. A lot of people like that. And
when he's little.
Yeah.
And isn't, which one's Crispin Glover? Is he in 4 or 6? He's in one of them.
He's in 4.
Okay, so he's in that one too.
So what was funny is that one, part four, Corey Feldman was getting big, but he wasn't super big yet. But then by the time part four came out, he was so famous, he couldn't show up to set for part 5. So they literally had to film his scene at the beginning of the movie in his own backyard.
Really?
Yeah, they had to like have him running through the trees in his backyard to make it look like the woods. And they brought in a rain machine and all this stuff because he was so booked, he couldn't even come back for the sequel unless they did it at his house.
Well, ironically, these days he's doing the same thing, but that's because he can't get booked. Right. But, a lot of people like that, the Corey Feldman one. He plays Tommy Jarvis. That's the final chapter. So that was supposed to be the end.
Yeah.
And I think that made more money than all of them. So they had The New Beginning, which I now that I think about it, I've seen The New Beginning. I did see The New Beginning. And
I like that one. I mean, people don't really ever talk about it, I think, because that's the one where Jason's, you know, he's not there. But I think that it was still, up until the very last scene, it's a perfect Friday the 13th movie. It had all the tropes from the series.
Anna, The New Beginning, what do you think?
You know, I always kind of just...
You don't like
it? Yeah.
But you like, part four?
They play a lot on television, I notice.
You like part four with Corey Feldman? You like that one?
It's okay.
All right. So we're moving along. I'm trying to gauge Hannah's interest in these. So you like the first one?
The first one, I do like the first one for the era that came out when it came out. Although his mother does get on my nerves.
Well, she's killing everybody. She's kind of a bitch, but
no, it's just the way she talks. Yeah,
you know, she's a sociopathic murderer. What do you expect?
She's an annoying old lady too.
Well, yeah. Jason. I think that was the point. And the part two, he had a sack over his head. What did you think of that?
It was kind of funny. Not scary. A sack over the head. It's like a 1932 Halloween costume.
Okay. Part three, the 3D one. Did you like that?
Mm-hmm.
They're throwing things at the screen and all sorts of stuff.
They get the fun disco theme song in part three.
The part three definitely get disco song, so they're throwing things there. And you, Corey Feldman, you're okay with. Part five.
I'm okay with, though, but I've seen that one so many times. Again, like it's the one they play on TV all the time. I just go over it.
Okay, yeah. So The New Beginning, did you like that?
Mm-hmm.
Even though Jason wasn't in it at all.
Mm-hmm.
It was a new
so, good.
So what? Well, what was the beginning? Because didn't they kill the guy that was playing Jason at the end?
What?
So didn't they kill the guy that was supposed to be Jason at the end, or was playing pretending to be Jason at the end? So what was the new beginning? Like, was Tommy Jarvis supposed to be the killer after that, or what were they going to do?
I think that they wanted you to think that it was going to be Tommy Jarvis, but then it's a fake out. You learn that, you know, who, I don't want to give it away, but you learn who it is, and it's not him. It's like, that's what was so good about it, though, because it was sort of like it served its purpose as a Friday the 13th, still had Jason killing people, but then it didn't mess up the continuity, so they could still kind of start at any point, part 6.
Right. And for our radio viewers, you just did air quotes, Dustin, when he said Jason.
What?
You did air quotes when he said Jason, just for our
audio. Oh, yeah.
So, air quotes. So anyway, So part six, Hannah, part six, Lightning Strike, he's back. It's kind of funny. What'd you think of that one?
I like the whole Lightning Strike thing too. It made a little more sense with shocking his body back.
Well, we'll get into that. So the James Bond thing and all that is a little goofier, a little sillier. Kind of the Dream Warriors of the Friday the 13th movies.
Yeah. All right. I don't know what it is. I don't really care that much for part six. That's okay. The one where they call it Camp Forest Green instead of Camp Crystal Lake. There was like a lot of weird things, like the zombie thing and all that. It was like, I feel like it's a polarizing one. Like, there's a lot of people that love that one, but I'm kind of in the camp where I'm just like, nah, I like the ones after better.
Yeah, you guys are so hardcore. Me, I like a little comedy with my horror, of course. So so part seven, with the psychic, Hannah, what did you think of that?
I didn't like the psychic. She kind of got on my nerves.
All right. It wasn't because it was supposed to be Carrie meets Jason is what it was kind of supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. I thought it was for the time. In the late 80s, early 90s, psychic phenomena was sort of making a comeback in media. Like the movie Cameron's Closet came out, I want to say, the same year. The
Boy Cleo, all that stuff.
Yeah, and so I think that it played really well for the time because people were talking about that and they thought it would be possible she could battle him with her psychic powers. So I think if you look at it from that angle, it makes it fun. But it's far from it. It's a pretty flawed movie. I hated the stepfather character that was like basically abusing her while he was giving her therapy. Like he's annoying.
Mm-hmm. Seems like all the parental figures are a bit abusive, as we'll see in this movie. So Dustin, because I've never seen it, where do we leave off on part seven? Now Jason dies, but how does he die?
I believe that's the one she catches him on fire.
Okay.
She shocks him a few times, like it's the electricity pulls into the puddle that he's standing in, and then I believe he actually dies at the end in the basement, like in a fire, that she sets the whole place on fire and it collapses.
Oh, okay. So here we are now. They actually were trying to develop something that followed immediately from part seven. The director, John Butler, who apparently is a very good special effects guy, was had a follow-up. The same character was going to be back. She was going to be released from the insane asylum. The actress that played her, I'm reading this off Wikipedia, of course. The actress that played her wrote her own script, that her boyfriend wrote a script. And Universal Studios is like, now we're going to go in a different way. And I think it was a smart way in that the new director, whose name escapes me, but thank you, Wikipedia. It's a guy's name, Hedden. Rob Hedden wanted to take him out of Crystal Lake finally, which I think is a smart move. And he's never gone back. He's gone to space. No. He's gone to see Freddy. He's gone to hell. He's never gone back to Crystal Lake.
But it's interesting because, like you mentioned, the three-fourths of the way into the movie, because they actually intended on setting the whole thing in New York, and then throughout production, the budget was getting cut more and more and more. It ended up being all on the yacht, except for, like, the end of the movie.
Yeah, it's like Jason's on the Love Boat. It's like, that's the thing. A lot of people don't like this movie because it's like, Jason doesn't take Manhattan. He takes a boat.
He takes a boat and Manhattan.
Yeah, two for one.
Yeah, so I guess he didn't.
You know what I thought was really cool?
Did he really take Manhattan? I don't know.
I mean, he did. I mean,
he cleaned up the streets. I mean, those guys that were like injecting her with like the heroin or whatever, like killed them.
Yeah, that's
why I say he's kind of a hero. I mean, a couple casualties, a little. You know, brats on the yacht just to kill a couple drug dealers, rapists.
Right. That's a good trade-off. Let's go through the plot really quick. Very quick, because it's a Friday the 13th movie. There's not much of a plot. Now, I was impressed with the movie because we saw boobies in 4 minutes. I thought that, I don't know if that's a record for the Friday the 13th franchise, but I was happy to see it. They have like two teenagers making out, and they're on a boat. They're sailing into Crystal Lake. They drop anchor, and then the guy comes back with a Jason mask. First off, this guy is the worst guy, worst foreplay I've ever seen in my life. This girl wants to have sex with him so bad, and I understand you got to drop anchor. I get that, but he comes back and scares her with a Jason mask. It's like, oral sex, something. Don't, what are you scaring her for? I mean,
I think that was like the era when dudes were like, oh, chicks love to be scared, bro.
Everybody has their thing, I guess.
Is that true, Hannah? Do chicks like to be scared?
I don't know. I don't want to be scared.
Dustin,
but I mean, kind of a cool plot, though. If you're going to be in Camp Crystal Lake, you might want to play a little bit of a joke on your lover, you know?
But Hannah, if you were all horned up and you wanted to get down with your boyfriend or whatever, and he's got to go somewhere for a second, be right back, and then he scares you, mm-hmm. are you still turning on?
It depends. Either he's gonna get a high five or a slap upside the head. It depends what the little prank is, I suppose.
With you, I think it's a slap upside the head. Dustin,
I don't know. I feel like,
would you find it cute or would you find it annoying?
Yeah, I think it would be cute because I think that couples always have makeup sex. And so I think like you would get all pissed off at them and then just want to screw the crap out of them.
All right. Well, there you go. I'm glad they made up. They started screwing the crap out of each other while they're having sex, and the boat doesn't waver for some reason, but it stays still.
It should have.
No, yeah, swagger right there. None.
Yeah, they should have. It should have been choppy waters, but there was the anchor hits an electrical line at the bottom of the lake. And that's where apparently Jason was dumped in the middle of the lake in the last movie, I guess. I don't know.
And I'm confused by that because that's what happens actually at the end of part 6. They tie the rock to him and put him under the water. Because then in part 7, I'm pretty sure it was the fire. But then at the beginning of part 8, he's coming back out of the water.
Are you telling me there's inconsistencies with the Friday the 13th timeline?
I think so.
Okay. So he's at the bottom of the lake. He wakes up. And this is actually a good excuse for him to get a hockey mask, a nice fresh hockey mask,
mm-hmm.
which for some reason still has a little dent in it. So a little like machete. And that's a weird thing. Now that I'm thinking about it, this movie, no machetes. Does he kill with a machete in this one? I don't think so.
He walks. I feel like he walks through New York with machete.
You think, but where did he get the machete? I'm trying to think. I don't think he does. I think he just walked around.
Anyway, he kills the girl.
I know he used body strength.
What?
He used some of his body strength. You know, when he on the rooftop.
Yeah.
Well, I got that, but the whole thing is Jason with machete is always the thing.
There were so many different parts that stood out. I can't even remember machete.
Oh, we're gonna get to the plot. So, by the way, before this whole thing that happens, they have shots of New York because it's Jason Takes Manhattan, mm-hmm. or shots of New York and Vancouver because when they go down to the subway station, there's no way that's a New York subway station.
It's too nice.
It's too clean. It's like, and you can tell it's like a nice new subway car they just threw some graffiti on. But
yeah,
I don't think I was in New York in 1989 ever, but I've been in New York in 2010, 2011. It's been a while since I've been in New York. It's probably been 10 years. But let me tell you something. I don't know what subway station that was supposed to be. They don't have nice white subway stations with big escalators going down. They have little steps. And you're down in the dungeon, brick wall dungeon is what
pretty grimy
New York subways are. Trust me on this. The elevated trains are a little better, but they're not nice like that. So that's got to be a Vancouver subway station. That will come into play later. So so Jason gets woken up. And so he kills the guy with a harpoon gun.
Mm-hmm.
And then impales the other girl who... Were they supposed to be on the trip?
Yeah, yes, I think that they do make reference to them not showing up. Yeah, exactly.
Okay, so the next morning, the SS Lazarus, wink, wink.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I got it. What a joke. Is ready to set sail for New York City with a graduating class of Lakeview High School, chaperoned by biology teacher Charles McCullough and English teacher Colleen Van Dusen. This Charles McCullough guy, I've seen him in like a million movies. Peter Mark Richmond. I've seen him in a million movies. And
wait, was that the actor that just died yesterday?
I think he did die yesterday.
Yeah, actor just died yesterday. I was like, oh, this is a guy from Part 8.
Yeah, so don't accuse us of not being timely. But RIP. He was a good actor. It's just like every time he pops in, like I think he was on soap opera. He's been like a million movies. He was in the Twilight Zone a couple times, I think, in the 60s.
I was going to say, and he was also in it. I just watched the Tales from the Crypt episode with Felicity, the little girl that the mom from, or the psychic from Poltergeist is in that episode.
Right.
She has a little daughter who wears the mask and runs around. The guy, he's like the radio host in that.
He's in that like everything.
Yeah.
He's in like everything. If you look at every sitcom from like the 80s, 90s, 2000s, he pops up for some reason. Anytime you need just a grumpy guy, a grumpy old dude, like he was always there. He was a good
actor. Kill guy?
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
He's the buzzkill guy.
He's the buzzkill guy in this one, that's for sure.
Oh yeah.
So he brings his niece along for the trip. Now his niece Rennie was played by Jansen Daggett. However, she beat out Elizabeth Berkley and Pamela Anderson for this role.
Oh wow.
Yeah.
It would have been bad with Pamela Anderson, I feel like, in that role. But I think Elizabeth Berkley could have been interesting.
I mean, could either of them have really nerded it out like she did? She's a bit...
I feel like it's similar to Elizabeth Berkley's Saved by the Bell character. I mean, she even kind of looks like that actress.
Yeah, so I can see... Yeah, I mean, I thought she was pretty good. But, it's weird to see who becomes a star and who doesn't. Especially since Kelly Hu is in this movie and she... Besides Corey Feldman and a couple other people, Kevin Bacon, probably, you know, the most famous person that's been in a Friday the 13th movie. And she obviously has been X-Men and Scorpion King and other things. And probably doesn't want anybody to see her 80s hair, but that's in there. So she has like all these like she has a dog with her, so you know, she has our sympathy there. And that dog comes and goes. That dog, I kept trying to keep track of that dog. I couldn't keep track of the dog.
And they just, yeah, randomly shows up alive at the end. And the streets in, Times Square. In Times Square, the dog just comes running up. And they're like, oh, hey,
right,
there it is.
Right, and it's like...
Yeah, but you cheer at that point, too. You're like, yay!
I mean, obviously, you want the dog. It's like, the audience definitely wants the dog to be alive at the end. But then it's like, they couldn't figure out how to do it. So there's like, while they're hugging, it'll just run up.
But the dog wasn't on the boat. How did they get there?
The dog was on the boat.
Oh, the dog was
and
on
that
the
was
boat?
The weird thing about it. So it purposely did not show the part where they get down on the one boat where they get off the cruise ship and they have to like
paddle. Yeah, in the life raft is what I'm saying. Was it?
Yeah, it's like the dog was on it, but it never showed how they got the dog down the ladder onto it. They purposely obviously glossed over it.
Right. So yeah, they all climb up and yeah. I didn't see the dog.
And suddenly the dog's there with it. It's like, yeah. Oh, how did you throw the dog down? Like what happened?
Okay. So,
slash.
So anyway, so you meet all the teens, and there's a guy with a pretty sweet. I'm sure Dustin, being a film director, you saw this VHS camera and went crazy. This
the guy's such a dork.
How bulky the cameras used to be. There's like a dorky guy with this. Wikipedia calls her a rock star wannabe, JJ Jarrett, which JJ. If she didn't look enough like Joan Jett, you have to name her JJ. I know it's Hannah's favorite character, and I liked it too. I wish it was in it more than 5 minutes. But
her look, everything. I was a little girl. I was just like, I want to look like her.
See, she should have been the survivor.
Yeah, you know? Right?
Like, whack him over the head with a guitar and been the survivor. I mean, I'm not, no offense to, no offense.
She's
to
also a very disconnected character, because if you notice, her scenes are completely separate from everybody. You never see her with the other people.
You think they just added her in?
I think it was shot later. Because it would have been easy to get the male character back, just that actor, to do scenes with her. I think that's probably what they did.
I don't know. You know, also kind of feels to me, it's like she was like the goth kid in school where you don't really fit in.
She was a rocker kid.
Yeah.
She was a rocker kid.
It was clearly how they at least, wrote it to be like.
Yeah.
They needed more metal in the movie, so they probably added her scenes in. And it's like, and obviously,
it's 1989. Where's the hair bands?
It's 1989. Probably Joan Jett made a comeback around that time, and they're like, "Well, we got to get another Joan Jett sort of character in this." I'm trying to think of 89. I hate myself for loving you. I'm trying to think of a Joan Jett thing from that time, but she probably made a comeback, and they're like, "Well, we need a Joan Jett type in this one." It's like Repo the Genetic Opera when Joan Jett actually shows up. It's just like, every movie needs a Joan Jett character, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Joan Jett rules.
Of course, she had the kid was madly in love with her, so he chased her everywhere. Okay,
I was madly in love with her too, and I would chase her everywhere. And if I was a teenager like him, and you know, when I was an awkward teenager, I probably would have done the same thing, and I would have tried to impress her with the size of my camera. And I don't know if that would have worked out. So she gets killed right away. All of these kills, especially this one, like I say, are relatively bloodless. When she gets hit with a guitar,
they were drastically censored.
When she gets hit with a guitar, all you see is a little splash on the camera lens. That's all you see.
Yeah. Because there was more to it, but like I said, it got cut
for sure. What was more to it? What was cut?
A lot of the MPAA was about penetration being cut in any form, sex, weapons, anything that showed a weapon going inside somebody would get cut. You could show the point of impact, like right when it hits, but then once it goes through something and pierces through, that's where they had a problem. So they reshot entire death scenes. Like the guy that gets the coals on his chest, they foreshadow earlier in the movie, they show a dartboard on a door. The reason they did that is because Jason stole the darts, and the real death is the guy getting his eyes plucked out with the darts. And they cut that and reshot it with the coals instead because they didn't want to show the penetration in his eyeballs.
Right, and so sexual penetration. And now that you mention it, there aren't really any hot sex scenes. There's some nudity, but not really.
Movie was really troubled. Yeah, they would not let them do basically anything in that one.
Right.
That's bizarre that they would have that rule when they would show narcotics being used.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was also a hot topic at the time, like AIDS and DARE programs and needles, so they you could tell how that was easy to work into that block.
Well, drugs are encouraged, and in 1989 the government was selling it anyway, so you might as well. this is the weirdest field trip I've ever seen in my life. There's a girl playing guitar and a guy filming her, and that scene makes no sense too, because she's like, he's filming her for a music video, and she's like, no, I'm gonna go down to the boiler room and shoot the video there. But he doesn't go with her.
It was a cool scene. That was a great place. He doesn't go with her,
so she's not filming anything.
But also because of the echo with her guitar.
I got that.
She liked the sound.
I got that, but...
anything about that? Well,
you're going down to film a video, bring a camera is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Well, he wanted to be a filmmaker, right?
No, but he didn't go down there with her. It was just her.
Yeah, she said she wanted to go down to film the video. Yeah, but then she went without the camera. That's what you're saying.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah,
gotcha.
I get that it's a cool scene, and it would make a good video, especially like every video in 1989 had a boiler room. Like every metal band was down in the boiler room getting down, but
a little bit of steam.
Yeah. It was very knocking. I get it, but they just they didn't have like you got why you're where's the camera? Joan Jett, Cinderella, Bon Jovi, they're all Skid Row, all those guys. Anyway. I saw the new Skid Row video. It was horrible. It was so low budget. Actually, Dustin filmed a video with Lords of Acid Threat, which I'm sure is way better.
Oh, yeah, I did. I did. Yeah. That was like last month.
Yeah, I know. I found it.
It has lots of nudity in it.
I can't wait. I can't wait to see it and enjoy it in my own special way.
Oh, it's out. I don't know if you, it's out. Well, we did two versions. We did a version where they have tops on because they put out an album in 1995 called Voodoo You. That's a bunch of naked devil girls. We did a live version of that. We got devil girls that were nude. And so we did a version where they're topless and then a version where they have tops on. And so the topless version's on the Lords of Acid Twitter and then the censored one's on Facebook.
Check the Lords of Acid Twitter. Anna, you like the Lords of Acid, don't you?
I wouldn't say I am such a fan. I could name like 10 other songs.
So like I said, this is the weirdest field trip ever. So that happens. And then there's a boxing match on the ship.
Yeah.
That's a great scene. Great scene.
The boxing match on the ship?
No, the other one. Wait.
I'm going linear. I'm going to have to step it up. But this guy, there's a guy who's a boxer. And he beats a guy. And the guy he beats up gets killed in the sauna. You just said they were supposed to. He gets killed with hot rocks, but... You're supposed to get darts in his eyes.
Supposed to get darts in both of his eyes.
Okay. So Rennie's looking for her dog who disappears for the first time, not the last time in the movie. The prom queen Tamara Mason and her friend Eva Watanabe played by Kelly Hu. First they lust after the boxer, then they lust after some random guy, and then they started doing some cocaine. And so the our buddy the old Groucho man catches them, and the Tamara, who is the prom queen, pushes our protagonist Rennie overboard, and she's afraid of water apparently, and she sees visions of Jason. But once again, even the visions are inconsistent, because sometimes he's a little boy and sometimes he's a mutant.
Right.
Now, does she have a psychic connection to Jason? Because I was really confused about this.
I think she's just emotionally scarred from it, because she's like, the reality is Jason's there as an adult and she probably is seeing him at certain points. But then that's also mixed with her vision of when she was little and saw him in the water grabbing her leg.
Right.
So even I think it's just her trauma, just mixing it up.
Okay. All right. So no, nobody ever knows how old Jason is. It seems to fluctuate. But so the prom queen has the guy with the big video camera, the VHS video camera, record the old grouchy guy with her in the bedroom, and she's naked, or she's got, yeah. So it's a whole thing. And so the camera guys who, instead of having a crush on the Joan Jett girl, who seems to like him, he has a crush on the prom girl and she rejects him. So then the prom queen gets
so killed. Unlikable too. Like,
yeah, he's such a beta male. He's so me. And he's so,
you like women that are just incredibly mean to you.
I don't like them, but every woman is incredibly
You're
mean
drawn
to me.
Them.
So, and unfortunately I'm heterosexual. So that's the way it goes. I was seeing how many people have fun, so much fun in the pride parade. I'm sorry, my own parade is the shame parade. It's a bunch of straight guys walking around. I know. Anyway, so I digress. So Jason, Tamara takes a shower, which is always appreciated, although you don't see anything. You get a little side move, which I like.
Yeah. Side move is sexy. It leaves to the imagination, you know? A lot of the movies in the 80s were too, like, look at my tits.
I think there might be a little hiney there, too. I'm not really sure. I can't remember, but I know.
Well, she seems like that was when they were having, like, grown-ass adults play teenagers, so she probably was, like, pushing 30.
Yeah, I'm sure she was probably older than the old grouchy guy, honestly, but
Jason comes in. Kids look like they're 12 today in movies. I'm like, I can't watch that. I'm not going to.
Yeah, there's
because they literally are. Like, they literally get 12-year-olds. It's like, they didn't do that before.
It's so weird to see how the depiction of teenage life has changed throughout the years. And then when you see movies back in the 80s and you're like, oh, Molly Ringwald was 15 or 16 when she did that, you're like, she seems older, but it's weird.
Because I think it's an intelligence thing. I mean, it's hard, I think, enough to be an actor for an adult. Imagine what's going through in a kid's mind. And I think that back then it was harder to find intelligent children that could also act to be in these lead roles. Whereas now kids, I think, feel like society is getting more and more intelligent with technology, and kids are a lot smarter than we were at that age. So it's entirely possible now to have real kids play kids when they couldn't do that.
We were talking about this last week with we had Suicide Girl and singer Alina Lowe on, and she has YouTube videos when she was a teenager. They're still up, and she's like a little awkward. And that was like 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. And girls, I mean, the kids these days are so professional and so camera ready, and they.
With their TikToks and their Twitters.
Their TikToks and the whole thing. And they're just like, they're so professional. It's too robotic for me. It's like, hi guys. Hey, like, comment, subscribe. How are you? And,
yeah. Everybody's their own brand now.
Yeah.
A lot of the casting too, you have to have a following.
Yeah. It's all based on social media following.
You're telling me, and I have none. So getting back to Jason. Better times where you didn't need to have a following. 1989, Jason Takes Manhattan. This was a good kill, but once again, you didn't see anything in that Jason breaks a mirror and kills Tamara with a shard of the broken mirror.
Yeah,
but you don't see it. You see the bloody aftermath, but you don't see the actual killing.
Mm-hmm.
Anna,
mm-hmm.
You're looking confused.
I'm listening. I'm just reliving the movie in my head as you're going. With it.
You didn't watch it last night like I did?
No, I actually watched it a couple days ago, not last night. I went.
Well, I was supposed to go. No, it's my fault. I was supposed to go over to Hannah's house last night and we can watch it, but I had a Facebook Live show, so I had. So, Rennie sees visions of young Jason throughout the ship. There's a whole subplot. I forgot about this. The captain and his son.
And a bunch of that was cut too. In the uncut version, like his friend in the finished version never talks. He has like a blonde friend with him. I think he only has a word he ever says. He had actual like a full-fledged character that was cut out of the movie.
Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
It sucks for him, but I don't think he added that much to the movie, but regardless. And this guy that plays his son is he looks about 32, and he's but the captain's like old, so it makes sense. So
I mean, the captain's like 60, and then son's obviously 30. He's like 17 year old.
Yeah. So they kill the cap. They kill the captain in the first mate, but once again, you see a little blood on the windscreen, but you don't see the actual killing. And I made a note when I saw that because I'm like, okay, they're really intentionally not showing the murder here.
And like I said, they had filmed them all for sure, but the MPAA just cut so much.
Do you think they were wanting to go for more dialogue because, like, instead of boom and bang in movies?
Basically, it had gotten, if you watch the progression of the series, the censorship got worse and worse because Paramount always considered Friday the 13th their black sheep series. They were kind of embarrassed by it. They never promoted it enough. They never put enough money into the productions. It was always sort of like a money maker for them, but they weren't proud of it. And so it was about image for them. They thought at the time in the 80s, the sentiment was they were trying to get away from TV violence and gore on video. And so that just fell victim to basically being the one the MPAA really went after to kind of, because they let them, and Paramount's like, go for it, whatever we got to do to get an R rating. And so that's just what ended up happening. Like, characters got cut as a result. Entire death scenes got cut. That one just got really big.
I was going to say, as an actor, filming a really cool death scene and then having that cut's got to be, like, heartbreaking.
Especially because back then, when you're filming on film and the elaborateness of the effects, it probably took them, like, 3 days to do that.
Yeah, scene. And a special effects artist at the time, too, just sitting there working, you know.
And not even knowing, probably when you go to the theater and then you're watching, you're like, what happened to my scene?
And then the special effects guys, the people who processed the film, the editors who edited on film, not final cuts, and actually had to tape splice all the stuff together and all that. It's MPAA sucks anyway, and they couldn't have released it unrated, so they got to do it. So Captain Robertson's son Sean becomes the boyfriend at the end. Discovers them to has everybody come to the drum to the bridge. And, calls the emergency. Ava, Kelly Hu's character, finds Tamara's body and flees. Jason chases Ava into the disco room, the dance floor, that's where cool. He strangles her to death on the dance floor. That is actually a cool scene. And apparently, from what I saw on the plus signs behind the scenes thing, he really picked her up.
Yeah.
And he really threw her.
Yeah.
Congrats to Kelly
Hoover. She was doing stunts, I think, at the time, because isn't she the one that's a stunt actress now or does bigger Hollywood movies? Is that the actress?
Kelly Hoover, yeah. Yeah, she does. She did The Scorpion King. She did X-Men. She's been a lot of
stuff. Yeah, because I think she does her own stunts, so that would have made sense, which obviously helped the scene look better.
I mean, I'm sure they have padding and everything, but it looks pretty brutal. Yeah. And once again, that's not a bloody death. That's just him. And that's Kane Hodder.
Painful.
Yeah, Kane Hodder, which is his second time playing Jason, and he would play Jason a couple more times. Most people's favorite Jason. Would you agree, Dustin? Or do you like somebody else?
The most well known. I feel sacrilegious saying that because I worked with the first Jason, Ari Lehman. He was in one of the movies.
It was great. No, I met him. He's terrific.
But he is literally in one shot of the movie, so most people consider him.
He's the little kid Jason that comes in at the end and grabs the things. It grabs the woman, so... He's not really the hulking Jason that we know and love. So.
Right.
So, the first Jason is your favorite kid Jason, and Kane Hodder is your favorite adult Jason.
Oh, yeah. I would say Kane Hodder for sure. Well, he's the one that has the defining Jason stature and way he walks and the way he interacts with the characters. I think the Jason they got, was it in Freddy vs. Jason? Yeah, where it was a different Jason?
Yeah.
It was one of those later ones that he was like, too skinny and small,
a little puny.
Yeah.
Oh, fun fact: I don't know if you know this, but the Jason, the Jason that replaced him, Fravor's Jason, is in this movie.
When
when they go to the diner, the cook from the diner that comes out and Jason kills him is the guy that played Jason in Freddy vs. Jason.
That's crazy. I didn't realize that.
Jason kills Jason in this movie. So, and the boxer guy, who I will refer to from here on in as Token Black Guy, gets everybody and start looking for Jason. And oh yeah, there's a crazy deckhand that just is randomly on the ship going, "You're all gonna die, Jason."
Yeah, they have a crazy Ralph.
You need one of those every once in a while.
Right. Well, he gets found with a fire axe in his back, so you don't see him getting killed. I'm guessing they filmed that death. Jason tosses a guy over the radio transmitter tower to his death, and Julian is knocked overboard in the hold of the ship. Wayne comes upon JJ's body and then is thrown into an electrical box by Jason. Did you like that one, Hannah?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Wayne's corpse catches fire, causes the ship to take in water. I must have not been paying attention because I know the ship was taken in water and I didn't realize why. Now I know. The other students that were left in the disco room seem like dead, which is appropriate because, you know, disco died a long time ago. And McCullough, Van Dusen, Rennie, and Sean escaped before the life craft and discovered that Toby and Julius are still alive. Okay, so this is 1 hour 5 minutes into the movie, mm-hmm. and we're finally see the Statue of Liberty.
To be fair, the movie's like 1 hour 40 minutes, though, so it's still almost half of it if you don't consider the end credits.
So they see the Statue of Liberty, and the Token Black Guy starts singing New York, New York. They rode New York, where Jason stalks him in the streets. Now this is where I think Hannah really is why she likes this movie. So Rennie, our hero, is kidnapped by a pair of junkies who are they're a little strange and very stereotypical. And the group splits up to find help. I don't know why, but they're
literally like, "Let's split up, okay?" And then
that was the other one. Like they get
mugged. That's a good idea.
These guys rob all of them. Take Rennie ostensibly to rape her. And
it's probably like 2 a.m. in New York. Like,
yeah, and so they're like, "Let's split up." Okay, that makes sense. That makes a lot of sense. So Julius fights Jason on the rooftop and gets exhausted. Now, this guy's supposed to be a boxer. He's exhausted after 20 seconds of punching. Now, come on. I mean, you got to do 12 rounds. I'm exaggerating. He punches him for, I think, a good minute, but still. You got to fight 12 3-minute rounds if you're going to be a boxer. Come on, what's the matter with
you? You got to also take into consideration what he's been through all night.
Mm-hmm.
All right. No rest, no
like, yeah, they've already been, they've escaped Jason already like 6 times at this point.
He's yeah, like, and so it made it more realistic for
so you
me.
Think he, so you think he was winded from that? Okay, well, I'll go
like,
along.
Because you're along the journey with them, you're kind of tired too. You're like, shit, you know, how can you keep going?
So I'll go along. Okay. So then he's like, another great idea in along the lines of let's split up. He says, well, first off, he's punching him, and the guy's not only Jason, but he's got a hockey mask. So you're hitting
the punching mask. The mask. Yeah,
you're hitting a hockey mask. It's hard enough to hit a guy in the face with bone and everything, but you got a hot anyway. So.
Yeah,
doesn't make sense. I would have ran, but that's just me. And so he's like, "Okay, take your best shots." And Jason,
this is great.
And yeah. Hannah, describe what happens next.
Oh, I laughed when I was little too. It's terrible. Took his best shot. His head just goes flying off the building.
He knocks his head off the. It falls off the roof into a dumpster, which closes.
Yep.
I shouldn't laugh at that.
Yeah.
Well, you shouldn't laugh at that because of this. They completely ripped that off from Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh.
Your buddy and co-host of your podcast, Vegans Uncensored, Mary's favorite movie, Killer Clowns from Outer Space. You've seen Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
Yeah, right, but kind of just didn't pay too much attention to it.
The best scene in Killer Clowns from Outer Space is the clown has a little box and goes like, "What up, you dukes? What up, you dukes?" And the guy's like, "What are you going to do? Knock my block off?" and he hits him, decapitates his head, and falls into a trash can.
Yep.
Killer Clowns from Outer Space was out.
I never even made the connection. Yeah.
And this is 89.
Yeah.
They totally ripped off Killer Clowns from Outer Space. And I like Jason Takes Manhattan. I actually liked it. It was better than I thought. It exceeded expectations. It's no Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
No, but it is thoroughly entertaining. Like the,
so
the
it was funny, but I was like, I've seen this before.
But, and
sure, it was a clown on a unicycle, but I've seen this before. Go ahead, Hannah.
There's another really, it's a great scene. It's one of my favorites. It's when he kind of just walking through the street and the kids.
It's coming. We're going through the plot here. We're almost done. So she runs into Sean. So anyway, so he gets decapitated. Rennie escapes from Jason when, oh yeah, Jason saves her from the rapists.
Yeah.
Now, why did he do this, Hannah?
Because I don't think maybe Jason's like 100% bad. I don't think he likes rape or anything. Maybe.
Well, I think he wanted Remy for himself. It was sort of like he was seeing these guys kind of take her instead of him, so he was getting them out of the way.
He's been trying to kill her the whole movie, and now he kills the people that were just about to rape her.
Or do they have a psychic connection?
I don't know.
Michael Myers or Jason, or that's like pervy, you know, in a way.
Yeah.
Just malicious.
No, Michael Myers would have killed her, but I guess Jason let her. So Randy escapes. He kills the punks that kidnapped her.
But she's all drugged out, which is cool because like they shoot her up and then she's all like being double and shit. It's all freaky.
It
is. And you want to know, like, is she okay after that? Like, then you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, that's my first thought is like, she's got AIDS.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like 1989 in New York.
1989, yeah. What are you going to do? That's the way it goes. So they got that. So the sequel would have been Friday the 13th, part 9, Jason gets AIDS. So she runs it to
horrible.
She runs. I'm sure they pitched it. I'm sure they pitched everything. She runs it to Sean. They reunite with the teachers. Oh, yeah. The grouchy guy gets the cops. So they go in a cop car, and the boxer's head is on the dash. So Jason kills the officer. Rennie crashes the police car. Oh yeah, because she sees another vision of Jason. Now these visions, sometimes Jason's a regular boy, sometimes he's deformed. I mean, what's going on?
I mean, like I said, I think it's
should her I trauma. Ask these questions or just go with it?
It's part 8. Just go with it.
Okay, so the nice teacher who's barely in the movie, the lady teacher is incinerated. The car explodes, and it's revealed that the grouchy guy is responsible for Rennie's fear and water, pushed her in the lake. And she saw Jason in the water, but was he really in the water? It's so weird. Like, how long was he underneath the water? It's so weird. I can't follow these things. Anyway, and we got to keep going. So I did like that he dumped the guy that pushed her in the lake into a vat of toxic waste.
Oh yeah, that was the perfect way for him to go.
Drowned in a vat of toxic waste. Which if you're ever in New York, there's a rat in the barrel. So if you're ever in New York, you can always find barrels of toxic waste. Trust me on that. People say, oh, Times Square is all cleaned up and Disneyfied. Walk a couple dirty blocks, you'll see vats of toxic waste.
Yeah, piles of trash everywhere.
Right. So Jason chases Rennie and Sean into the subway, which even though the subway is obviously Vancouver, I really like the scene. I like Jason in the subway. That's good. There's a lot.
He knocks that one girl over. Remember, she's standing there, and he's just like,
"Shut her." Yeah, it's so great. And I know that the things they also have planned that they didn't get to film, Hannah, because of budgetary reasons. He was going to be on the Brooklyn Bridge.
Mm-hmm.
The fight with the guy who was going to be in Madison Square Garden. I don't know if they were going to go in the ring or what. And they were going to be on the Brooklyn Bridge at some point, and they didn't have the money for it. So Sean Sean pushes him into the third rail. Oh yeah, because they get off the train, he pushes him in the rail. So Jason revives. They chase him through a Times Square into a diner, which you know, that's a very cheap set to have. And then they go into sewers, where they encounter a worker. And for some reason, I didn't know this about New York, but they flood the sewers with toxic waste at midnight. You know, it's New York. And then the other, and Jason appears. Oh, yeah. So that's about the time that Jason's walking down Times Square, and they have the great shot of him with Times Square circling around. That's great. This is why people are disappointed with the movie, because this is all really good. And this is fun. And this is Jason as we've never seen before in an urban setting. And then this gang of apparently 14-year-old Jewish kids who look really tough go up to Jason and start threatening him. And he pulls off his mask and you see from behind and they get scared and leave. So that's good. They maybe could have cast maybe slightly more menacing thugs and it would have been even funnier, but okay. So
I think they maybe wanted to keep it on the rapists, you know.
Yeah,
junkies to be the notorious.
Well, they should have had. They should have had him do that to the rapist and had the rapist killed. Anyway, I don't know. I just it's just funny to watch old 80s movies, and I don't know if it's that they want to be politically correct or they just didn't want any minorities in any movies. But most of the movies where you see gangs in the 80s, they're either integrated or they're all whites. It's really weird. It's like Death Wish 3. It's like the gang is like so multicultural. Like the guy from Bill and Ted is in the gang with a
yeah.
Like they're black, Latin, white. It's like so weird. Anyway, so I don't want to get into it. We don't have time. So they throw toxic waste in Jason's face, and they climb a ladder, and he starts getting reminded of his childhood drowning. Mm-hmm. I didn't catch this, but I guess that's the interpretation Wikipedia is getting. It vomits water, and then wastewater overcomes Jason, causing his face to melt away. When the water recedes, Sean and Rennie witness what appears to be Jason as an unconscious child, and then they make their way up to the street where they're reunited with the dog in Times Square. The end. Now, how did Jason revert to being a child again?
Okay, so that ending was trimmed a little bit. There's a shot that's very important that was cut out of the end where while he's drowning and spitting up water, they shot this giant, they built a giant mouth of Jason, and they show the young Jason in his mouth drowning, trying to call for help. So it was really symbolic. And so I think that's the moment that kind of like it wraps it up and explains sort of what's going on. And because they cut that, the ending's kind of confusing.
So Dustin, what else did they cut out of this movie? I mean, you worked on the DVD, so you have seen things that nobody else has seen.
Yeah, so about 13 minutes was cut out of this movie. And not all of it was gore. All of the gore scenes were cut, but a lot of what was cut was like what I explained with that actor. It was like character development stuff because they wanted to pick up the pacing. Because even the final cut's 100 minutes, which is long for a slasher movie.
There's more with the captain and his son.
Yeah, there was a lot of that stuff, because just side stuff. And then also the scene where the blonde teacher drops off Rennie, where they're sitting in the car, and she explains how the pen was used by Stephen King. There's a whole backstory to her writing there that they cut out, why she wanted to be a writer. So they took that out too. But then most of it was just like weird, like alternate stuff, like the death I explained where they had the darts in the eyes instead of the hot coals. Obviously, the decapitation was a lot gorier. I want to say pretty much every. Oh, one of the craziest shots I wish they would have kept in, but you see it in the trailer, is Jason standing there, and there's like a crane shot that comes down and shows him looking at New York, and he turns around and looks into the camera. That was a scene in the movie that was cut also.
Oh,
it's a great shot.
Yeah. So what happened was, so Shout Factory put out the box set of Friday the 13th about a year ago, and they commissioned a bunch of people to work on special features and stuff. And how I got involved was I had a lot of old TV recordings of like previews of the movie on like HBO and Cinemax and stuff, like rare, you know, trailers for it. So I gave them that.
This is what Dustin does with his spare time.
Yeah, yeah.
He doesn't have a lot. Honestly.
But then I ended up editing an uncut composite of part 8. And so we used a work print, trailers, a TV version, like Japanese VHS. There's all these different elements that went into compiling it to get all of the deleted footage, including B-roll, because there was a lot of stuff too that was cut at the beginning of the boat where like he attacks her with the harpoon. It actually shows him completely like grind in there and pull out the heart and everything, and that was all trimmed out. So it was a lot of go, about 13 minutes of stuff.
So yeah, and then the other thing as far as advertising this movie, the poster that said, "I love New York" with Jason hacking through the poster. It's a great poster. And apparently the I Love New York is copyrighted, so they can use it.
Yeah, and it really pissed off the mayor of New York at the time, too, because they thought it would kill tourism having Jason on that poster.
It was a Koch or Dinkins.
Come on, really?
Well, New York then was not
iconic now, though. I mean, it's a famous poster now, and it's fine now. Yeah. But at the time, yeah, it was
New York. New York was a dump at that time. New York was not, they're not getting a lot of tourists at that time. It was really, you know, New York had a bad 80s, honestly. It was a good 80s as far as, you know, the rise of a lot of culture, punk, rap, and all sorts of stuff going on there. But it was pretty gross. It was pretty seedy. It's like, you know, how you just moved to Hollywood, so now you see what it's really like. That's kind of what New York was like now.
Yeah. I don't leave my
not your little cocoon in your luxury apartment. I'm saying walk down the street a couple blocks and you'll see the homeless encampments under the bridge.
Oh yeah, it's crazy. Right out here, homeless encampment, Hollywood sign.
Yeah, so but that's what New York was like in 1989. And but it was successful. It actually did better than Friday the 13th Part 7. But as I said, Paramount said, that's it. We don't want to make any more of these.
Yep. They sold it to New Line. They
sold it to New Line. Jason went to hell. Jason went to space. And Jason fought Freddy. And then Paramount did the remake, which I've never seen. And I started watching it. I got it from the library and I started watching it. I got pretty bored with it.
Yeah, it was kind of reminding me of Rob Zombie's Halloween, where like they tried to put way too much story into one movie. Because like Halloween, they had like the whole backstory as to why he screwed up, and then they still did all of the Halloween story from part one.
Right.
And this remake was the same, where it was like parts one, two, and three combined into one. So it was sort of like just a lot to take in. And it wasn't that well executed either.
That's weird, yeah. Although I will say I agree with you with the Rob Zombie's Halloween, but I actually am in the minority, ever the contrarian, and I think we talked about this. I think Rob Zombie's Halloween 2 is really creepy.
I don't like
Rob Zombie's Halloweens. I do.
I don't know. I like Halloween 2. I thought it was creepy. I must have been in some weird mood when I saw it, but I was like, and it was the director's cut. I'm like, this is, it was so different. I kind of liked it, but. Then again,
I felt cheated by it because they started out with her in the hospital, just like in Halloween 2, the original. Right. And I was like, cool, he's going to be stalking her in the hospital, it's going to be super freaky. And then it was like, then she left the hospital. And it
I could have done without that whole fake out, but I thought the white horse stuff was a little too much. But
I think that's what it was. Once they had the scenes with the white horse, I'm like, this doesn't fit with this movie. I was like, this is kind of getting too existential.
But the Munsters preview was so bad that it made up for it. So.
Nuh-uh. I think the Munsters I'm in the minority on that. I think the Munsters looks amazing. I can't wait to see it.
And we had Daniel Roebuck on the show, and he was delightful, and he's such a great guy. He's the one guy in the trailer that I'm like, yeah. I don't know about the porn stash. I don't know what's going on with that. But he looked the couple lines he had, he looked and sounded just like Grandpa, but it's in color because the coloring scheme looks weird, and the color.
What it looks like is the old Munsters movies from the 70s that have the Technicolor kind of look.
Right,
like,
right.
I think that people, they're looking at this so differently than I think they should, because like if a lot of people I know online that are trashing the Munsters they're like young kids that aren't fans of the Munsters, so it's weird to me that everyone's bashing the Munsters. But like if you actually watch the old show and old movies, they were cheap. They were colorized, Technicolor looking. It looks aesthetically how the Munsters looked then. And I think Rob Zombie, of all people, he's such a big fan of the show, he would know how to do it right for people that are hardcore fans. So I think if you can approach it from like, no, this looks spot on from how the Munsters looked in the 70s, then it works. But I think too many kids that don't know that history of it or have seen those movies are looking at it and being like, why does this look all weird and cheap?
We'll see. Other than the aesthetics, the jokes were like really bad Disney Channel style jokes. But
it's a PG movie, though. I mean, Rob Zombie's trying to do a PG movie.
Let's get off the Munsters.
I have a problem with him always casting his wife because she's a really bad actor.
He's got to get some. He's got to get some nookie. Come on, he's got to.
Okay, have you seen Three from Hell, Hannah?
I did see Three from Hell. I will say.
She's better in that. Come on now.
Better in that, but just her. I can't.
But see, that's the thing too. Like, I think a lot of it is the writing itself, because she's playing a character she was written. Like, she was written to be baby. She was supposed to be weird and quirky and have these laughs. And it's like, how I mean, it'd be hard as an actress to do that and do it to a point where people don't think it's cheesy. You know, so it's sort of like she's sort of a victim to his writing with
that. And she's not exactly a trained actress either.
So.
Yeah. What?
I said she's not exactly a trained actress. She's not, we're not talking Kate Winslet or Kate Blanchett or Meryl Streep. She's an actress, but she's no Meryl Streep, but she could really get into the...
But does she need to be for a Rob Zombie movie? And that's my thing. It's just like, so what? Like, nobody's an actress in these horror movies. They're all like amateurs and stuff. Like, it's his wife. I feel like I put my sister in all my movies. What's the difference? Like, she likes doing it. She's fun. She has her own following. Sherry does have a following. So it's like,
I mean, your sister's a better actress than Sherry Moon, but don't.
I'll tell her you said that.
Okay. And let's be honest, Lords of Salem was still his best movie.
But I love Lords of Salem.
Lords of Salem is the best. Lords of Salem is the best. Really creepy. Anyway, let's get off the Rob Zombie Monsters thing. Let's get back to Manhattan. Jason Takes Manhattan. It was a decent hit, but they decided not to do it. So, Hannah, now that we went through all the plot and all the kills, do you see what we're saying, that the kills weren't as gory as you remember?
I like the plot. I still my favorite movie.
The plot, we're on a boat, then we're in Manhattan. That's the plot.
Yeah, they got away from Crystal Lake instead of it being so repetitive. All these kids are going to go camping and get murdered and have sex. It was a nice change.
Right.
Yeah.
And it kind of showed a little bit too of what New York was like.
Have you ever been to New York,
Hannah? Era of music, it's a great period, and fashion.
Yeah. Have you ever been to New York, Hannah?
Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't know. Dustin, you've been in New York, right? Or no?
No.
You should go. But New York, it is a little different than the Manhattan thing. I mean, yeah, they didn't show. There was a lot of griminess in New York that they didn't show. Because how many days did they shoot in New York? Probably, what, five?
I think that maybe eight. But yeah, yeah. Five or eight.
Yeah. And I've been to Vancouver, and that's nice too. Which they should just forget New York, just Jason Takes Vancouver. And then there's the other inconsistency too. How did they get out of the lake onto the ocean? That's the eternal question everybody's asking.
Oh yeah. Like, how did they go from Crystal Lake to literally the ocean of New York? Yeah, that does not. Nobody ever even brings that up.
No, everybody brings that up. I've seen that for,
I mean, like, you know, anybody official to explain it. Like, it's never been explained.
Well, I mean, you see, this is the thing. Like, nobody cared in 1989. It's 2022, and every movie, including The Monsters and Friday the 13th, is under a microscope.
That's because everybody has the internet and, like, a, you know, they're behind their, like, keyboard, being a keyboard warrior. And
yeah.
Everybody thinks they're a Hollywood mogul. Movies,
just enjoy them for what they were. They were great.
Everybody thinks they're a Hollywood mogul, and they're always doing podcasts and posting. And, no, I would have done this different. I would have done this different. And they have no idea. Michael May sucks.
See, that's the thing.
Let me tell you. Yeah, let me see you handle $100 million.
Yeah.
Let's see how you do.
It's because I think there always have been people that act that way. But like I think Hannah mentioned earlier, it's sort of like there's the keyboard warriors now because people have the internet. And so now we see and hear from these people that are constantly just going on and bitching about stuff. And it's like they've always been there. We just didn't ever hear them before. Now it's all over. Because the thing is, I think, I don't know if I've ever said it on your show, but there's that analogy about like a restaurant. Like if you go and have a good experience, you don't really tell anybody, but if you go having a bad experience, you tell everybody. And that's so really, it's not a fair representation of the movie when you see negative reviews, because that's just the people that went and complained. Doesn't mean that there's more of them. That just means those people went and complained.
Things were, there could be so
way more
better.
People that liked it, just didn't say anything.
It's like no matter what you post, like you can post a picture of like my new puppy and someone will have something nasty to say.
Yeah, like, when did you last get the haircut? You abuse your dog. Like,
right?
and the things were so much easier when they had big camcorder cameras and you had to mount them on your shoulder, and that was the best brain technology. Well,
easier back then. You didn't have to get your smartphone out to like get your seat in the movie theater.
Right. The phone was actually bolted to the wall and you had to dial it, and there was a cord, and I will tell you, I was at the Magic Castle about a month ago, and these two people I was with, they were in their 20s, and there's a phone booth in there, like where you go into, and they were amazed.
What's this?
Yeah, they were like, I had to explain what it was. Like, it's a payphone. You put money in there.
That's when you know you're old. But I took a picture in Hawaii with the with the payphone. They're like, is that a real payphone? I'm like, yeah.
Is that a real payphone?
No, and it's it works too.
I know I'm old, and they should have had like some sort of payphone gag in this one. But we've been talking, Jason. Take Manhattan. This has been so much fun. This has been so much fun. It's just flown by. But I have a question for both of you, and Hannah first. Uh-huh. Now, they haven't had a Friday the 13th movie in a long time. If you were, if they asked you to do a Friday the 13th movie now, what would you do?
You know, I don't think Jason's ever, you can be cliche and say Jason takes Los Angeles. That's never happened.
How does he get from New York to Los Angeles, or hell from Los Angeles, or outer space?
He just rides a boat. It's fine.
Yeah. The lake goes into the boat, that it goes through Panama Canal.
Maybe he learns how to drive.
Yeah.
Jason road trip, maybe?
Yeah, there you go.
Jason goes through all the whole country, like hitches a ride and kills people on the way.
Or you can.
Well, they kind of did that in Halloween, too.
Have him take, like, the Midwest, the Bible-Belt states. That would be kind of funny. Just have him, like, face off with some rednecks.
Jason takes Planned Parenthood and starts chopping up anti-abortion activists.
I would watch that.
Jason takes the Supreme Court and starts hacking them up. But that's too political. I can't believe everything's so political these days. Dustin, you are an actual writer, director. If they gave you the Friday the 13th franchise, and they should, what would you do? Friday the 13th in the Hood, what would you do? I mean, this is kind of Jason the Hood.
I would not do some garbage like that. I would honestly recon
the director of Amityville in the Hood.
That was a hired gig, okay? We ought to do what we got to do for money.
Hey, Leprechaun in the Hood was funny.
And I went with that route. That's why I agreed to it. I'm like, I'll just make it like a fun 90s Hood movie. It'll be fun.
This kind of is Jason Goes in the Hood.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. But see, I would do like what Halloween did, where I would go and recon it and be like, the original girl survived, and then have like a new story where he's been following her this whole time.
Oh, so you can so many of those.
No, because you got to add some continuity to it. Because the thing that the Friday the 13th movies suffer with is none of them are sequels except for 4 and 5 and 1 and 2. The rest are just Friday the 13th movie in a whole new setting. So you need something like they did with Halloween where it's like, okay, this is how it's all connected. This is why it's all happening that way. They need something to bring it together. Might not be that it's the final girl from the original, but something where it's like someone's been hunting him the whole time. You can bring back the guy from Jason Goes to Hell, maybe, that was hunting after him. Just something to bring it together.
Corey Feldman, he needs some work.
Yeah, you know.
But I mean,
that way, I
Texas Chainsaw Massacre did that.
There was a rumor going around, I think last year, that they were going to do a Friday 13th with Corey Feldman facing off with Jason. Fans really were freaking out over it.
I would see that. But I mean, they did The Final Girl Comes Back and like Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the Netflix one. They did.
I feel like that was so wasted.
That was awful.
I thought the movie itself was okay.
I thought it was okay too. It was a lot more fun than I thought, because I expected the worst.
It took us literally 4 times to sit down and get through the whole thing.
Some of it was funny. It's kind of the Jason Takes Manhattan or the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
No, it's not.
Because it's a little silly and it's a little bit.
Yeah. See, I think it's being I think it's a little misunderstood, because I think that, I mean, you know, people have seen it, obviously can have a valid opinion on it. But I think that when it was coming out, it was getting criticized for people calling it too woke. But then it's interesting because it's actually the opposite. Like at the end, the woke girl gets decapitated.
Right.
And the guy that's like, bro, we're totally going to cancel you, they all get brutally murdered. And that's the first movie in the series with an actual massacre. And that was that massacre scene. None of the other movies in the whole series have a massacre.
I liked it, but I thought the bringing back the original girl obviously wasn't the same actress because she died.
Yeah, because she wasn't the same actress, that ruined it.
That was a little too, and that actress was fine. It wasn't her fault, but I thought it was a little too Halloween 2018. Like it was way.
That didn't make it seem really similar. Yeah, there wasn't enough.
Up until then, I thought it was pretty. It wasn't great, but it wasn't the disaster I had heard.
Well,
wasn't as good as the Matthew McConaughey one, but you know.
But since you did bring that up, what if they made another Jason? Would the kids be stupid and just pull out their cell phones and be like, "Oh my god, it's a mass murderer"? The hockey.
I feel like that's what would happen. Is they try and be all meta?
Exactly what would happen.
Live stream.
Yeah.
Can't we even do that today?
I like that scene in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. because that's exactly what would happen.
Yeah, but can we even do it today? Think back to the 80s and like Texas Chainsaw Massacres and like,
didn't have Summer Party
Massacres. If we had cell phones back then, it wouldn't be the same. Wouldn't be as, you know.
Yeah, because you have to go in. I think it's hard for younger kids to appreciate older movies for that reason, because they don't really even comprehend the technology that was available then in those movies.
So they're like, right. Running Up That Hill is the number one song. They love the 80s. Everything 80s they love.
And because of stupid ass Stranger Things. Don't even be started on that.
we should do an episode on that.
At least Kate Bush is making bank. Good for her.
And I've said this before in other interviews. I think that show punches you in the face with nostalgia. And I think that's where you cross the line.
I've never seen it.
I haven't either, because even the trailers make me want to go insane. It's like the 80s weren't even like this. This is what they want to say it was like without it being like it's all overdone with pop culture. Like it wasn't rock songs playing everywhere you went. And, you know, it's just like it's so overdone.
The 80s were like Jason Takes Manhattan.
What would you do with the Jason franchise, Friday the 13th Mark? Where would you put him?
Oh, geez. That's because, he's been in space. He's been in the hell.
I like the space one. I did like the space one.
Space one's funny. That's another one that gets a bad rap, but it's funny. It's not.
That's the worst to me because it has cheap production values. Like, it literally looks like a soap opera. Like, on a cheap
stuff. David Cronenberg, come on. There's some good stuff.
He forced them to do that. Like, they did some agreement where he did some financing and are writing on it, but he said only if I'm in the film. So they like were forced to put him in it.
Right. You would think he would go back to Camp Crystal Lake. I'm still trying to think where Freddie left him, but I think,
well, they didn't really, either of them die at the end of that. Right. Because it like shows Jason holding Freddy's head and winks. So they're both still alive at the end.
Honestly, I hate to say this, and it sounds very cliche, almost as cliche as bringing back the final girl, but I would do a found footage.
Final footage?
I think that they had toyed with that idea, actually.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of it in the Friday 13th remake at the beginning, actually.
I would do a movie because they did a good remake of the movie Maniac from the Killer's
point of view. Oh, yeah, that was good.
The movie from Jason's point of view.
That was
good. I like the idea of doing it from a point of view. I didn't like the casting of what's his name?
Elijah Wood. I thought he was good.
Oh, he's no Joe Spinelli.
He's no Joe Spinelli, but there's no way he could be Joe Spinelli, but I liked it. I like Elijah Wood. He's got a creepy underside. I don't know.
I don't have a problem with him as an actor. I just feel like Maniac, to me, when I think of Maniac, I think of like grimy New York.
Oh, yeah.
You know, early 80s, gritty. And then the remake of that was so like polished and nice.
But that's New York in 2011 or whenever they did it.
It felt like more like American Psycho than Maniac, though.
No, that was intentional. I saw that. But the original Maniac you can't touch. And Joe Spinelli was great. But, and Hannah, if you want to see really grimy New York, that's really grimy New York.
I've seen it all. I just had a really like random question pop in my head for the both of you. Leprechaun versus Chucky, who would win and why?
Chucky would probably. No, I don't know. They're both supernatural.
Yeah,
it's a draw.
It would be one of those.
And trust me, I would not want that. I would not want to see that. That's ridiculous. That's like midget.
Only because the Leprechaun, they both kind of got bad. Like the Leprechaun movies have gotten real bad, and the Chucky movies haven't been great the last few years.
But they're both like really tiny. Just to see them square off would be very entertaining.
Hannah, you want to know my real answer? Who would win in a fight, Chucky or Leprechaun? Our friend Michael Gogan. Anyway, so. Dustin, look up Michael Gogan if you don't know who we're talking about.
He's a sweetheart.
He's a wonderful actor. He was in let me clue everybody in the Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas movie, the waiter that comes over with the phone, the little person.
Oh, that's him.
That's Michael Gogan. That's who was in a fight between Chucky and
he's Michael. In a bunch of movies.
Oh, he's been in so many movies. He's great. Yeah. Anyway, we could talk forever, but we gotta get going. The bottom line for me Jason Takes Manhattan was better than I've been led to believe, but it is flawed. Dustin, would you agree with that?
I would say the censorship makes it flawed, but it's still a really fun.
Where would you? Where does it rank at the top of your Friday the 13th list? What's at the very top?
Yeah, I would say that it ties with 3 as okay. being my favorite.
And Hannah, still your favorite?
It's still my favorite. I think if you have enough time on your hands, you can sit there and you can pick apart anything and just find it flawed.
Well, it's...
I'm happy with the way
it is.
It
doesn't pick it apart to say it ripped off Killer Clowns from Outer Space. It doesn't pick it apart to say they're in a lake. How'd they get to the ocean?
I mean, that's... Yeah,
or doesn't pick it apart, like, if you're going to film a video, where's the camera? That's not picking it apart. That's just...
I don't know. I'm a fan. I just like to sit back and just, like, be entertained.
All right. Well, you will be entertained with all that Dustin Ferguson has going on. Dustin, tell everybody what you have going on and your new streaming channel and all the movies you have in production and everything you got.
Yeah, so Mark was just in a film of mine called Liza, Warden from Hell, where he played the pervy security guard. Big surprise!
Yeah, so typecasting.
Big surprise.
He had to like really stretch for this.
I got my pervertness down in one take.
Yes, he did.
Basically, you just cast
so natural. He's like, action. I did my scene. He's like, perfectly pervy. That's a wrap.
Yeah, so we did that. It's a women in prison movie that I did. It's supposed to be like throwback to 70s women in prison movies. And then it's a double feature with a movie called Beyond the Gates of Hell, which is my homage to Lucio Fulci movies like House by the Cemetery and City of the Living Dead. So I did those back to back. That's going to be coming out next month. Apex Predators 2, which you're also in, premieres Thursday night.
Did I make the cut? Am I still in it?
Yes, of course you're in it. You're being the weirdo member looking at your phone in the bar, okay. Like making it's hilarious.
And I'm in a scene with the guy that was in Commando and Mad Max.
Yeah, with Vernon Wells.
And the guy who played George of the Jungle and George of the Jungle 2. They're both very nice guys.
Yeah, they were really cool. But remember, Vernon was running like 3 hours late that day because he got
everybody. I was too. Everybody was running that late.
Oh my God.
We filmed that at Christmas. It was in Sylmar. And mm-hmm. I've never seen, and I live in LA. I've never seen traffic like this in my life. It took me 2 hours to get there. It took Vernon Wells 3 hours to get there.
Yeah, and I remember he's calling me every like half hour, like, I'm 2 minutes away, but I'm not moving. It's like, oh my God.
Literally, the street, you were on the street, on a side street, and nothing.
Yeah, like could not just get a few blocks over to the studio. Like
I had to go down alleys. It was so bad. It's the worst. It was scarier than the movie ever will be.
Yeah. So that show's Thursday. And then the other one, obviously, is Don't Trick or Treat Alone, which you're in all three of these. Don't Trick or Treat Alone.
Really. I'm becoming a Dustin Ferguson regular, and I really like it.
I know. You bugged me enough times, I gave in, I guess.
Hannah, so that's like, what you got to do.
Dustin, you're one of the most brilliant minds in movies, I think, because you can keep turning these movies out one after another. What keeps you going with that? Do you get ideas randomly in the middle of the night, or? Grocery shopping, you're looking at a cereal box.
What inspires me the most is the outdoors, because a lot of slasher movies took place in the woods in the 80s and in settings like that. So I often, when I'm in those kind of scenarios, I will get ideas like, ooh, it'd be so creepy if this one thing happened. And so I'll start forming ideas like that. But also, I always have so many ideas that I can't get them out quick enough. That's why I do so many movies, because I'm always like, ooh, but then this sounds like really cool. And then because I love it. Like, I want to make movies that I personally would watch and really enjoy. So I don't like play by certain rules. I don't try and make them a certain way. It's just like, what would I love? Like, if I, like you said, how you like to sit down and be entertained. Like, I just want a movie that has A, B, and C in it. That's all I'm going to do. And so I will come up with, my original goal was to make a movie in every subgenre. Like, I wanted to have a Killer in the Woods movie. I wanted to make a Giallo. I wanted to make a Killer Doll movie, a Possession movie. But now I've actually done that. So now it's sort of just like, what just feels like a fun movie that I would enjoy watching? That's just what I ended up making.
Have you ever had writer's block for a long period of time?
Yeah, I think that writing is one of the hardest parts, because like I'll have the idea and I can usually come up with the outline pretty easily, but the real challenge is literally typing it up to like a 70 page script or something. So half the time what I end up doing is they're like 30 page scripts, and then we can improvise a lot on set and make it more organic, because I feel like art's better when it's free flowing. If you're just going literally off of black and white paper, you're losing the artistry in the heart.
But Dustin, how do people get to see your great artistry?
Like they, okay, so like you mentioned this channel, I'm about to launch, I have a streaming channel now that's on Vimeo, but I'm going to be launching a Roku channel soon with my, I'm opening a film studio out here, which is going to be the official SoCal Cinema Studios building. We're going to have it here in Riverside County. So it's right in between LA and San Diego. So it's like the only studio out here. And so it'll not only provide a place for me to just be there every day and crank out all these crazy movies. Also, we can rent it out to other local filmmakers at discounted rates. So people have a cheap place to come and film the movies.
That's awesome.
And if people want to get a hold of you, how do they get a hold of you?
Facebook's best. I'm all up on Facebook all day long. I have the blue checks, you know, that it's me. I have an Instagram account, but I'm like not on it. So Facebook's the best.
And Hannah is, I saw a thing with Mary that says Vegans Uncensored is going to be a thing. Is it? Are you going to start doing podcasts again?
Vegans Uncensored, we are coming back. You know, we had a tough time, you know, for the past year, but we're coming back. Yeah, we're going to be reviewing some new restaurants, new vegan products.
Yeah, and did you enjoy being back on the show?
You know, I did. I did. It made me feel
good. That was a big sigh. That was a big sigh. You're like,
because I'm sighing at my puppy. Like, it's seriously tearing my house apart right now.
Well, we know where your priorities are, and we will end the show there. And you are you're not Hail Hannah 666 anymore.
I'm just Miss Hannah Bach.
Miss Hannah Bach.
And yeah.
It's good to have you back. As I said, you're always invited. Thank you. Dustin's always invited. And I'll see you tomorrow as a cult leader in my hood, and I'm goth and my perviness will be intact. And I'm goth comedian on all social media. Everybody have a wonderfully creepy week. And don't forget to take Manhattan. Bye.
Bye.